This is the Blaze Radio on demand.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services
at 800-600-1645. That's 800-600-1645. 800-600-1645.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Well, as I'm reading the news, China is being negotiated. I mean, I want to put the good spin on this. Donald Trump is obviously negotiating with China, and China has responded saying it's the one China policy will not be a part of any negotiation. And if you want to threaten us with that, all negotiations and future partnership will be over. They're taking a hardline stand, and so is Donald Trump. It's kind of a white knuckle kind of thing, quite honestly. Russia is now our new best friend, and the Russian ruble is going through the roof. Oil is starting to go up, and this week we are expecting the Fed to raise interest rates. And Chris Martinson is here. He is with peakprosperity.com. He is a guy who I think really understands the economy and understands the history of the currency war and the gold standard and trade, and can kind of help explain, because I think we're going to need a real basis of history and knowledge to be able to talk our friends down from crazy tree in the coming months and years. Chris, welcome to the program. How are you?
Glenn, I'm doing very well. It's a real pleasure to be back with you and all your listeners.
So tell me, Chris, what you're thinking the Fed is going to do this week and how it's going to affect us.
Well, they're going to have to raise rates because they're behind the curve here. The Fed cares about their credibility as much as anything. Remember, we have a lot of academics sort of at the helm in the Fed. And of course, to them, credibility is like the most important thing to preserve. So they have to raise. And it's a very weird environment to be raising rates in. It's certainly created a lot of boost to the dollar. The dollar strengthened a lot lately, but we're seeing a lot of strengthening in the price of oil as well, and a lot of signs, Glenn, of weakening in the overall global economy, the stock market notwithstanding. The trade data is looking iffy.
Okay, so if the dollar, if we raise the interest rates, that will boost the dollar. And if we boost the dollar, that actually hurts the job front at home and hurts prices at home, right?
Well, yes, except for the prices at home. And typically, if the dollar's stronger, we'd be able to buy, I don't know, BMWs cheaper. So we have that side. But a rising dollar is not good for corporate profits in the United States. A little over 40% of all revenues from U.S. companies are derived not in the United States, from overseas. So,
and it makes it harder for other countries to buy our products because our dollar is stronger, and them coming over here and buying our products, it's more expensive.
Right. So typically what happens when your currency gets stronger, your trade, your exports go down, and your imports start to go up. Because you can afford more from other people, they can afford less of your stuff. That is the substance of the charge that Donald Trump has put against China, is that they're a currency manipulator, by which he means they're keeping their currency much weaker than it should be, because if the Chinese currency strengthened, then their exports would slow down, their imports would rise, that would help to balance things. So
right.
That's his charge
and,
there.
And it would be good if we didn't have an imbalance and everything else, like, you know, what it costs to employ people here in America, if we could even get close on that level with China, which we could never. They employ slaves. But it's good for the person that's walking into Walmart and buying their stuff for the Chinese dollar to be, or the Chinese yuan to be low and have them devalue, but it's really bad on jobs because they're not buying any of our stuff.
Yeah, very little of it.
So it's a balance. This is what I'm trying to get to is trade and the devaluing or the raising of interest rates, especially in an economy as fragile as ours is really a very nuanced and delicate dance. And you play it wrong and the thing spirals out of control.
Well, that's exactly right. And this should be termed, I think, as much as anything, the age of imbalances. So we're talking about an imbalance of trade between China and the United States, but there are similar imbalances that exist within the Eurozone, with Italy needing a lot more money than it's got and Germany sort of providing it, and then, air quotes here, balancing it out by creating these massive imbalances in their central banking system inside the country. These things have all been building for a really long time, Glenn. And I think if we wanted to put our finger on something, we would say August 15th, 1971, when the United States abandoned the gold standard for the world, that's really where all of this started. And these imbalances are enormous now.
Well, that's when we all decided we wanted a life we couldn't afford. So the United States did that. But we convinced the rest of the world that we'll continue to buy your stuff so it'll be good for you. But we all said, all of us, we want more stuff than we can afford if we base our dollar or our currencies on gold. Is that accurate?
It is, because gold provides a set of restraints that you just can't get around. And if you can't get around those restraints, well, sometimes you get to live beyond your means, but very soon thereafter, you have to live below your means. The world collectively kind of said, we don't like that below our means part. How can we just forever live above our means? That's how these imbalances got started. And it's a very human thing, Glenn. We've seen this so many times in history, and here we are again.
So we are worried now, if the Fed raises the interest rates, that would indicate that they are worried more about inflation than deflation. And deflation is bad because everything is worthless and becomes so cheap. You would think that this is really good, but I'm trying to figure out why it is really bad, and it is. Why is deflation something that they're trying to stay away from at the Fed?
Well, this is a more subtle argument because, you know, the way it's presented to us in the newspapers is that inflation is rising prices and deflation is falling prices. And I can't find anybody who says, well, what's wrong with falling prices? I love buying stuff cheaper, right?
Unless you're selling your house.
Well, unless you're selling your house, of course.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, if you're buying a house, you'd prefer to buy one that's cheaper rather than more expensive. So,
So
everybody I talk to says, look, I like falling prices. That's not what the Fed is targeting when it's worried about deflation. They have a different thing they're worried about, where prices rising or falling are the symptoms, but the cause is what they're concerned about. And the cause is either our credit markets are expanding or they're contracting. When they're expanding, which gives us inflation, everything kind of works. You know, governments can continue to run deficits and big banks can do crazy dumb things, and it all seems to work out. The opposite, though, Glenn, when credit is falling, that's also known as 2009 in the United States. It is deeply scary. What works in forward doesn't work at all in reverse. The whole system shudders and threatens to collapse. It's a really scary moment. So we have a system that either expands.
Wait. Is that because what I have as collateral is no longer worth as much, so I can't get credit, or why is that?
Well, let's take a simple example. We just have a bank, you and I, and all we're doing is making real estate loans. And we're you know, taking in $1 and basically loaning $9 more dollars back out, because that's how our system operates. And we loan those $9 out to somebody who's bought a house. And if that house goes up in value, that person will be able to sell that house, service that mortgage before they do, and maybe buy a bigger house, and we'll loan them $9 more dollars. And that expanding's easy. But as soon as that person can't sell that house for what we've loaned the money to them to, then all they have to lose is $1 out of that $9 that we loan them, and our entire capital stock of our business, our bank, is now wiped out. So you can't have even tiny, tiny contractions in the credit system without really impairing and sometimes destroying the banking system itself. And that's what the Fed cares about. Because let's remember, the Federal Reserve is not really federal. It's a private entity. It's got a charter from the U.S. government, and it operates a very nice monopoly. But its first set of clients always is the banks. So if the banking system's happy and expanding, the Fed's happy.
Okay, so they're not worried about deflation. They're worried about the bank. But by doing what they've done, they are throwing caution to the wind by printing $7 trillion worth of currency, never been done before in the history of the world, and expecting that hyperinflation won't happen. How can we have printed that much money and not had the problem of the Weimar Republic? What's the difference?
The difference is that today we have these really so-called robust financial markets. So I was just at a wealth conference on Monday of last week, and that question was asked, hey, where's this inflation? Well, it's in the financial markets. We see highly, highly inflated stock and bond markets. We see inflated real estate markets, especially on the top end. Now, Glenn, who got that money when the Fed printed all those trillions? Well, it kind of went to the upper 0.1%. So guess what? Buying a Gulfstream 650 is a very expensive proposition, high-end art, very large diamonds. These things all went up extraordinarily in price, so we have seen the beginnings of inflation. It just didn't show up in eggs and milk this time because the Fed didn't print and give it to people. They printed and gave it to a financial system.
Is that a savior for us?
Well, I think it's provided temporary appearance of relief. But when those rich people, when those concentrations of money decide, I don't want another Gulfstream 650, I'm worried about the value of the currency, all of that currency rushes through what are very tiny little doors trying to get into real stuff again and away from paper stuff.
And that's why real estate, that's why art, I've looked at the art. We just sold, I think, one of the most expensive paintings ever. Again, was like $85 million for one piece of art. And I explain that as the people at the very top have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. They know that everything is overvalued, but it's like looking at a bill at a very nice restaurant that didn't have any prices on the menu, and you're looking at the bill and you're thinking, how the hell did we get here? Well, I've got to make the broccoli now $35 a head because I've already priced the meat so far out that it's got to, we got, the broccoli is looking like a deal. And so so the art is looking like a deal at even at $85 million compared to where everything else is overpriced. Is that accurate, do you think?
It is. It's what happens when too much money is printed and put into a market. Things get crazy priced. And so, we saw that for tulips in the 1600s in Holland, and we've seen it with pieces of swampland in Florida. We've seen it over and over again. And the bubbles always have the same self-reinforcing mental map on the way up. It makes sense. People are like, well, the last guy paid $79 million. I paid $85. Somebody surely is going to pay me $100 million for this piece of art. That's all self-reinforcing on the way up, and we don't know why, but eventually there's a pin that bubble finds, and when it bursts, then you discover what the true value of things is, and
Chris,
things go down very quickly.
You talk to people, and I have. This is the reason why you work for me on these things now, because I couldn't find somebody like you. Everybody in your business will say, we have systems now and it's not going to be that way and they don't have to worry about those things. No one will tell you what you're saying to me, that this is going to burst and it's going to be ugly.
Well, you know, if it's not going to burst, we have to believe in the four most dangerous words in human investing history, which is, this time it's different.
It's different.
It's not different. It's never different. I'm seeing the exact same psychology, rationalizations, post facto rationalizations that people make. Oh, here's why we had this Trump rally. You know, to me, it's much easier to understand where we are if you see that we've got a very scared set of central planners. They've worked themselves into a multi-decade corner. They don't know what to do, so they print. And you can find this story in Roman times. You can find it in the first paper money in China. You can find it all through history, and it boils down to this, Glenn. It's very simple. Humans would much rather take a little risk today instead of some pain today in the hopes that things turn out better in the future. We always go down the same path.
Real quick, I only have 30 seconds. Are we going to see... hyperinflation situation like the Weimar Republic? Or do you think we're going to see that? If so, we're going to see it in the next 4 years?
We're going to see it at some point. It could come at any time. It will happen at some point. And I think that the best quote on this comes from Ludwig von Mises. He's an Austrian economist.
Yeah.
And he said, there's no means of avoiding the final collapse of a boom brought about by credit expansion. The alternative is only whether the crisis should come sooner as the result of a voluntary abandonment of further credit expansion, or later as a final and total catastrophe of the currency system involved.
Chris, thank you very much. Peakprosperity.com. Chris explains all of this and can help you through it and everything else. Peakprosperity.com. Chris Martinson.
Glenn Beck.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services
at 800-600-1645. That's 800-600-1645. 800-600-1645.